You are now on the floor of the 17th and final CIO convention. Joe Glazer, with the guitar, is about to call the roll. Melvin Douglas will be the narrator.
I'm going to call the roll of unions in the CIO. Got them right here on my old banjo. Going to call the big ones, call the small, I'm going to call the in-between ones. Let's call them all, let's call the roll. Let's call the roll. Let's call the roll of the CIO. We've got Uniteds, Amalgamateds, Internationals. They've organized the workers in the shops and mills, in the stores, the offices, the ships on the seas, in the mines, on the buses, in the factories. Let's call the roll. Let's call the roll. Let's call the roll of the CIO. Now down in Pittsburgh, there's United Steel. Up in Detroit is Automobile, an aircraft and agricultural implement too. And on the seven seas, we've got the NMU. That's the CIO. Steelworkers, auto workers, sailors on the sea. We've got the union with a smile, I mean telephone. Up in Vermont is United Stone. We've got electrical and radio, that's IUE. And the men that write the news, they're the ANG. That's the CIO. Good-looking telephone gals, quarry workers, sports writers, too. Now, in the inside pocket of your coat and suit, you'll find the Amalgamated Clothing Workers and a label to boot. We've got retail, wholesale, department store. We've got furniture and wood and many, many more in the CIO. Tailors and lumbermen, laborers and store clerks, all sizes, all colors, all CIO. On the subways of New York, we have TWU. Scattered all around, we have United Shoe. We have the SOS boys, known as ARA. And now we've got oil, chemical, and atomic. I suggest you move out of the way while I call the roll. Make room for those CIO atoms. We've got tool and die makers known as MESA. We have a lot of CIO up Canada way. From Maine and Oregon to the Gulf of Mexico, wherever you go, there's CIO. Fishermen in Alaska, sugar workers down in Puerto Rico, canal men on the Panama. We've got CIO barbers to cut your hair. CIO tires will take you anywhere. You can light your home with CIO utility. And the transport service union handles your bags with agility and ability. We've got brewery, textile, we can't forget the broadcast engineers they call NABET. The leather union tans the hides while the packing house workers cut up the insides. Pork chops and pot roasts. Rubber workers and radio engineers, spinners and weavers, red caps and bottle caps, all CIO. We've got a lot more union in the CIO. Takes a lot of union to make the CIO go. When the shipbuilders union makes a great big boat, the marine engineers make sure it'll float. We've got paper, insurance, lithographers, glass, government and civic, and now I'm going to pass because I'm all through. Except for a few, like the LIUs, state and city councils, ladies' auxiliaries. They're important too. Every group has played a part in CIO. Every union's made a mark in CIO. Every person's helped to build a CIO. And I'm proud to call the roll of CIO. Let's call the roll of brotherhood. Let's call the roll of dignity. Let's call the roll of solidarity. Let's call the roll of the CIO.
There are other names, too. Names of places, big cities, tiny one-factory towns. Names of leaders, some known to all, many never identified. Names of friends, names of allies. A roll call that only history itself can put together. The roll call of the CIO.
CIO, CIO, and we'll never stop. We are on top, for we are the CIO. Yes, we'll fight when we must, for our cause is just. We will battle every foe, and we'll never stop till we are on top, for we are the CIO. CIO, CIO.
They call that the song of the CIO, the spirit of the CIO. The spirit of the CIO in a couple of verses. Well, it's just as well. A couple of thousand verses or chapters or volumes wouldn't do much more. The story of CIO can't be adequately cataloged. No more than you can catalog the history of love, of honor, or sacrifice, or dedication. The story of CIO is the story of people, millions of them, working, crying, struggling, rejoicing together. It's the story of practical men who dared to dream, and dreamers who dared to be practical. It's the story of Matthew proclaiming again, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavily laden, and I will give you rest." It's Isaiah declaring, "Learn to do well, seek judgment, relieve the oppressed, judge the fatherless, plead for the widow. Come now, and let us reason together."
We will overcome. We will overcome. We will overcome someday.
Tell the story of the CIO. Perhaps someday your grandchildren will be reciting in school.
The CIO was a labor organization during the period 1935 to 1955. It had three presidents, John L. Lewis, Philip Murray, and Walter P. Reuther.
Is that the story of CIO? In a way. But in a real sense, CIO was born long before that official birth date of November 9, 1935. You might say the beginnings go back to the Philadelphia shoemakers, sent to jail in 1806, back to the Pullman strikers, standing up to the bayonets of the United States Army in 1894, back to the steelworkers' strike in 1919, back to the many years of hopes and dreams and unheeded cries of millions of workers for organization. And is there an ending to the CIO? Of course not. For it's more than an organization, a name, a set of initials. There can be no end to the unions built and strengthened under the banner of CIO, to the pensions being paid, to the ideals instilled, to the friendships formed.
Since I've been introduced to the CIO, I ain't no idea. Stranger now. I ain't no stranger now. I ain't no stranger now. Since I've been introduced to the CIO, I ain't no stranger now.
No, there's no real beginning and no end. But these 20 years are a chapter, a particular chapter with particular accomplishments. It fell to us in our generation to meet desperate needs with daring answers, to be the vehicle for organizing Americans to meet those needs. It's been said that we can never know how far we've gone unless we know from where we came. Philip Murray reminded us often from where we came.
I went into towns where children were eating out of garbage pails. People were living in hovels. No pictures on the walls, no carpets on the floors, no music in the homes. The working population was suffering, and in too many instances was starving. Disease, sickness, and poverty were rampant. And death stalked in the wake of every worker's family because he could not purchase medicine.
Pictures on the walls, music in the homes. What does this have to do with CIO?
What is a union for? To feel the pulse beats of the people, to live close to the people, to understand the people's problems, and then to use constructive, intelligent strength of the organization to promote the well-being of families, and by doing so, to promote the well-being of nations.
To promote the well-being of families, the well-being of nations. How far have we come in the realization of these goals? How does one measure our progress? There are statistics, of course.
From the Bureau of Labor Statistics, average hourly earnings, all manufacturing employees, 1935, 55 cents. 1955, $1.89. Percentage increase, 261%.
Percentage increase, 261%. Not too bad for 20 years. But these are cold statistics. What does it mean to one man? Let's hear from Frank Tuttle, the first man in his plant to retire on a CIO-negotiated pension. He felt pretty good, and he wanted to tell everybody about it. And remember, this was 1950.
Today, I punched my last time card at the plant. Now I'm balancing my account. In 1933, my pay was down to 60 cents an hour. Then came the union. By 1950, my wages were $1.83 an hour. Throw in the fringes, like holidays and vacations, and it comes to an even $2. 60 cents before the union, $2 now. Altogether, I figure the union got me about $24,000 extra in wages, and my pension and my insurance is worth an additional $16,000. That makes a total of $40,000 won for me by the union. I've paid $225 in dues, and I've lost about $1,200 walking the picket line. For every dollar of dues and lost time, I've gotten back $28.
28 for one. And the same kind of arithmetic can be done by telephone workers, clothing workers, merchant seamen, oil, rubber, any and every other group of organized workers. But that's not all Frank Tuttle had to say the day he retired. Let's listen.
28 for one. Now that much is simple arithmetic. But who can calculate the extra years of usefulness to thousands of us because the union didn't let the company say we were too old to work when we reached 40 or 50? How much is it worth to know that when we were laid off, we would be called back in our exact turn? Above all, what allowance for the fact that we have been building a better world to work in, which we can leave as an inheritance to our children and grandchildren? Oh, even Albert Einstein can't give you an equation that'll measure these things.
No, no. There's no equation which can measure self-respect or industrial democracy. And who could measure with statistics the sense of human dignity that CIO brought to America? The millions once considered faceless card numbers who are today treated as human beings and think of themselves as human beings. That rubber worker in Akron, Ohio, said it well after their first sit-down strike.
We were nervous and we didn't know we could do it. Those machines had kept going as long as we could remember. When we finally pulled the switch, there was some quiet. I finally remembered something, that I was a human being, that I could stop those machines, that I was better than those machines anytime.
Oh, sure, you can measure the financial value, but not the spiritual value of protection against sickness and old age, of medical centers, of cooperative housing. You can calculate the cost of guaranteed annual wages, but hardly its value. How far have we come? Oh, we've been coming. And we haven't stopped. New tomorrows, new horizons, new goals. And sometimes we even dream.
I dream that I had died and gone to my reward. A job in heaven's textile plant on a golden boulevard.
The mill was made of marble. The machines were made out of gold. And nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old. And nobody ever got tired. And nobody ever grew old.
And sometimes dreams come true, but not easily.
They picked me up about 8 different times and threw me down on my back on the concrete. While I was on the ground, they kicked me in the face, in the head, and other parts of my body. And after they kicked me down, they dragged me by my feet down the stairs. And again, they started to hit me at the bottom of the stairs. They hit me, and they slugged me, they drove me ahead of them, but never letting me get away.
Lest we forget, dreams don't come easy. The words you just heard were those of an auto worker called Walter Reuther, testifying about how he'd been attacked by thugs in May 1937 for the crime of distributing leaflets at the Ford plant. But many others never lived to tell their story.
Coroner's report, Frank J. Walsh, coroner, Cook County, Illinois. Name, Otis Jones. Sex, male. Nationality, American. Date of death, June 8th, 1937. Cause of death, injured in riot at Republic Steel Mill, May 30th, 1937. Died in Burnside Hospital. Diagnosis, bullet wound in back.
What was Otis Jones' crime that he was shot in the back? On Memorial Day in 1937, there was a peaceful parade of strikers at the South Chicago plant of the Republic Steel Company. There were 150 policemen, too. And fortunately, so that all the world could soon know the truth, there were also newsreel photographers present. A columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch examined the films over and over again, and then he wrote of the Memorial Day massacre.
A vivid close-up shows the head of the parade being halted by a group of 150 policemen. Suddenly, without apparent warning, there was a terrific roar of pistol shots. The ground is strewn with dead and wounded. In several instances, from 2 to 4 policemen are seen beating one man. 30 persons, including 1 woman and 3 minors, received gunshot wounds. 10 men died, 7 shot in the back and 3 in the side. None were hit in the front.
That was 1937. Others died before them, and others since, in the exercise of their democratic rights. And many others were prepared to make the same sacrifice. In February of 1937, sit-down strikers in the Fisher Body Plant No. 4 were threatened with ejection as a result of an injunction which had just been issued. Strikers wired the governor of Michigan.
We, the workers in the plant, are completely unarmed. And to send in the military, armed thugs and armed deputies will mean a bloody massacre. We fully expect that if a violent effort is made to oust us, many of us will be killed. We take this means in making it known to our wives, our children, and to the people of Michigan and of the country, we've decided to stay in.
Fighting for our children,
We shall not be moved. We're fighting for our children. We shall not be moved, just like a tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
We shall not be, we shall not be moved. We shall not be, we shall not be moved, just like a tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved.
Yes, these were the raw materials out of which CIO was built. Was it all worthwhile? Perhaps the answer is to be found in an essay written by a 16-year-old high school boy in Bemis, Tennessee. He had a kind of special reason for knowing.
Organized labor is not just a union you join. It's an organization which you must mingle in, contribute time and valuable thinking to. It's an organization that's not sprung up overnight. It's taken years of painful, hard fighting to get it. Some live so that they could work and contribute their time in organizing many plants, factories, and mills. No matter what kind of union you have, it can't run itself. It must be taken care of. Make preparations for your children and theirs. Build your union as you would build your home.
Build your union as you'd build your home, wrote 16-year-old David Simmons, the son of Lowell Simmons. Lowell Simmons was a local leader of the CIO textile workers. On Christmas Eve, 1951, during a strike at Bemis, Tennessee, he was shot to death by a strikebreaker.
I dreamed I saw Joe here last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, says he. I never died, says he. The copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe, I didn't die. Says Joe, I didn't die. Joe Hill ain't dead, he says to me. Joe Hill ain't never died. Where working men are out on strike, Joe Hill is at their side. Joe Hill is at their side.
But CIO was not without resources of its own. Ideals, loyalty, sacrifice. There were picket lines and there were sit-downs. And there was knowledge and understanding, too. Mostly, there was solidarity, brotherhood, a feeling of belonging. Oh, and that was fun, too. Sure, CIO could laugh even when things were rough. Many a picket line or union meeting perked up when someone started to sing.
You gals won't be free. Take a tip from me. Get you a man who's a union man and join the ladies' auxiliary. Married life ain't hard when you got a union card. A union man has a happy life when he's got a union wife. You can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die.
You can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. And millions did stick. And CIO unions were built and made strong. And other unions grew, too. In these two brief decades, the ranks of organized labor grew from less than 3 million to more than 18 million. But let the record show that as we grew and became stronger and developed maturity, there was too a growing maturity in the ranks of management. Sure, it wasn't an easy road. There have been many bumps on the way. But today, well, let's listen to David J. McDonald reporting to the steelworkers.
At first, our struggle was to gain recognition, and we lost in those early days. With patience, feeling and believing in justice and right, and the full knowledge that our course was sound, we later did gain recognition. After this recognition came growth and strength, and now we have heard the top leaders of the American steel industry say, we not only recognize the United Steelworkers of America, we accept the United Steelworkers of America.
And let the record also show that we haven't been alone. We've had our enemies, sure, but we've had our friends, too. Wherever men of goodwill and democratic conviction were to be found, there you found friends of organized labor. All we asked was the right to organize. Franklin Delano Roosevelt agreed, and so did the Congress, which passed the Wagner Act, and so did the Supreme Court in 1937 when it declared,
"We say that labor organizations come out of the necessities of the situation, that a single employee is helpless in dealing with an employer, that the union is essential to give laborers an opportunity to deal on a basis of equality with their employers. The Wagner Labor Relations Act is constitutional."
And men of religion were found to be speaking out fearlessly for labor. Leaders of every faith identified the aims of organized labor with the basic foundations of religion itself. A priest once told a CIO convention, "I'm glad to be here because I belong here." To the eyes of other men, the Savior appeared as a tradesman, a worker. A rabbi declared, "For me, the labor movement is a spiritual movement in the same sense that the church is, an organization to lift one up above materialistic needs and to give one a vision of what can be." And a minister declared, "I am convinced that the organization of labor is essential to the well-being of the working people. It's based upon a sense of the inestimable value of the individual man."
They tell a story about Van A. Bittner during a strike where the owners had declared open season on union officials. And Van slipped away from the friends who had been assigned to watch for his safety, and he went for a walk. When his friends found him, they were angry with concern and asked, "Don't you know better than to walk out here alone?" And Van answered, "I'm not walking alone. I'm walking with my God."
We will build a new world.
We will build a new world.
We will build a new world.
Sidney Hillman once declared, "There is no welfare without the social welfare. Economic progress, peace, democracy in all its forms, these objectives of society were the objectives of organized labor." CIO has said that what is good for America is good for the CIO. Shortly before he died, Hillman stated with simple eloquence,
"We want a better America. An America that will give its citizens, first of all, a higher and higher standard of living, so that no child will cry for food in the midst of plenty. We want to have an America where the inventions of science will be at the disposal of every American family, not merely for the few who can afford them. An America that will have no sense of insecurity, and which will make it possible for all groups, regardless of race, creed, or color, to live in friendship, to be real neighbors. An America that will carry its great mission of helping other countries to help themselves."
On many fronts, CIO has been working and fighting to create this kind of America. This kind of world. It's provided the training grounds for citizenship. Thousands of men and women who served on political action committees and legislative committees, in community service activities, in union education programs. In turn, their training and dedication has led them to serve faithfully and efficiently on local school boards, Red Cross chapters, community chests. In fact, wherever people are working together for the social good. In the field of civil rights, for example, in 1947, James B. Carey spoke for millions of CIO members and their families when, as a member of President Truman's Committee on Civil Rights, he joined in declaring that
We abhor the totalitarian arrogance which makes one man say he will respect another man as his equal only if he has my race, my religion, my political views, my social position. In our land, men are equal, but they are free to be different. From these differences among our people has come the great human and national strength of America.
Yes, it's been well said that the letters CIO really stand for citizenship in operation. And citizenship was really in operation one morning early this year in the nation's capital when five United States senators sat hushed and moved as they listened to the quiet testimony of a shirt worker from South Carolina. Mrs. Rosalie Watkins had come many miles to ask support for a higher minimum wage.
You can't make a living on 75 cents an hour or 90 cents. The present law is real hard on people. It's the children. They're the ones that suffer. If we had a higher minimum, there wouldn't be so many sick children and clinic cases. It would help people help themselves instead of the government or charity helping them.
CIO's political and legislative activities have been directed at labor objectives, of course, for a higher minimum wage, against Taft-Hartley, for improved unemployment insurance, but CIO has never been found wanting in campaigns for the public good, for the elimination of segregation in our public schools, for liberal immigration policy, for the safeguarding of our civil liberties, for aid to farmers, for fair tax laws, for adequate housing and social security and health measures. For CIO believes that there is no welfare without the social welfare.
If each little kid could have fresh milk each day, if each homeless soul had a good place to stay, if each working man had enough time to play, it could be a wonderful world. If we could consider each other a neighbor, a friend, or a brother, it could be a wonderful, wonderful world. It could be a wonderful world.
If we could consider each other a neighbor, a friend, a brother. And CIO recognizes no national boundary lines to brotherhood. It has united with free workers through the ICFTU to create a world of peace and justice, a good world. In its appeal to free labor all over the world, the ICFTU has declared,
"Together, we can conquer poverty and exploitation and create a world of abundance and security. Together, we can destroy tyranny and oppression and create a world of freedom and human dignity. Together, we can defeat the forces of war and aggression and create a world of peace and justice."
A world of peace and justice. CIO has been privileged to play its part in the creation of such a world. We've come a long way here in America these 20 years, but so much remains to be done. Count the hungry faces then, and count the strong ones now. But remember ones still unfed. Count the ragged children then, and the rosy-cheeked ones now. But remember the millions still in slums. Count the victims of the wars we've seen in our short life, and count the blessings for each day of peace. But remember the fears and doubts still haunting us. Yes, count the millions once yearning for union strength, and count the union members now, but remember the millions still unreached, millions still yearning, still daring to hope. There is indeed much for American labor to do, and it will take more unity and more strength than ever. Remember well the words of Alan Haywood, who until his very last breath kept driving us to build our union strong.
The fact is that the CIO was born in an atmosphere of hunger and poverty. Yes, and desperation. We organized and we went on strike. We challenged the great corporations and we resisted the nightsticks and the tear gas of our police. Today, trade unions of America have fought their way to acceptance by the corporations
and by the government. But keep this in mind. No government, no administration, no group of public officials, no matter how friendly, can hold our gains for us. It is only our unions, supported by the solid determination of our members, which can ensure our future.
It's 20 years now since the letter CIO first made an indelible mark upon American history. And those who've been privileged to be associated with this stirring chapter are not content merely to look back upon that chapter with pride. They again turn their eyes to the future, a future of new opportunities, new goals, new dreams.
This is the beginning of what can be the most glorious chapter in the history of the free American labor movement. Let us join hands with the men and women of goodwill in the American Federation of Labor, and together face the future with the will, the courage, and the sense of dedication that we have demonstrated in the past. Together with free men everywhere, we can be among the important architects of building that better tomorrow in a better world, a world fashioned in the image of freedom, in the image of justice, in the image of decency, and in the image of human brotherhood.
These were the words of hope and confidence of the president of CIO, the words of Walter P. Reuther, when the historic merger agreement was adopted earlier this year. Hope and confidence that flow from strength, from unity, from solidarity. For years now, millions of men and women have been giving expression to this confidence which solidarity inspires, each in his own way, sometimes hesitant, sometimes eloquent. And they've sung about their hopes, too. Some have sung all the words. When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Some have sung just the last words, words of hope, words of strength, words of brotherhood. They have sung these words sometimes with smiles following victories, sometimes even with tears in defeat. For they knew the union makes them strong.
Solidarity forever.
Melvin, I'd like to thank our good friend Melvin Douglas for a very brilliant performance. I think we've all been inspired. And Joe Glazer.
My big problem was to keep from crying during Joe Glazer's songs.
Well, if you kept from crying, you did better than I did, because I couldn't keep from crying.
The last voice you heard was that of CIO President Walter Reuther, closing the final convention of the Congress of Industrial Organizations.